Welcome to the Sports Scouting Report Podcast with Lee Brekeen.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Sports Scouting Report. I'm your host, Lee Brekeen. Our guest today, I'm very honored to have a former LSU strength coach, one of the best in the business, Nick Buchholz, who's from Pennsylvania originally. We're going to talk about his story. I want to introduce some sponsors before we get going. Treads and Care, which is in central Louisiana. Appreciate Devin Holly coming on board. Since 1971, all your car needs. They do everything. Anything you think of with a vehicle, they do it. Treads and Care. Also, Medine's Collision Center. Big time place to go take your car and truck for any paint jobs that you need or body work on your vehicle. And also, Tommy Harvey, John Harvey Toyota, Bossier City, Shreveport, big time sponsors of ours. Be sure to, when you're looking for a new or used car, to call them at any moment. They're big time sports fans as well. But I want to get back to our guest, Nick Buchholz. Nick, thanks for joining us all the way from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, right?
Yep, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Lee. It's really good to be here. I appreciate everything.
Before we talk about, and I want to introduce you, kind of give people an idea of who you are, like the young listeners, you know, the people under 30 that might not go back to the set. Me and you like to do history on sports.
Right.
But you were at LSU for 11 years. You were there from 84 to 2000.
Yes, I was, Lee. That's a long time of my life. It sure was.
And you were at UL in Lafayette, strength coach, head strength coach at UL. And you're in Myrtle Beach now, but I wanted to tell everybody, before you became a strength coach at LSU, I was told by a good buddy of yours, Joe Abragamo, and Gordy Rush has also mentioned this to some people, because your former roommate, we'll talk about that, but before you became a strength coach at LSU, tell everybody, I mean, you came from Pennsylvania, you had no ties to LSU, you had no ties to Baton Rouge, and you walked onto the team. Tell everybody your story of how you got to Louisiana in the first place.
Wow. It goes back a long way, Lee. As a strong Christian man, I believe things are meant for a purpose. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and my dad was a football coach. He was a high school football coach. So sports and football in general was a big part of my life. And I don't know if you remember, but I used to watch the ABC Game of the Week.
Yeah.
And it was, you only get a football game once a week. And,
right.
Chris Schenkel and Bud Wilkinson back then. And it started in December of 1970. I was watching a game. It was a late season game on national television, even came to the Pittsburgh area. Ole Miss was playing LSU, and is normally, LSU would play Ole Miss in October, but for some reason the game was in December. Mm-hmm. And they made a big deal about Archie Manning playing in a game with a broken arm. He had a special cast, and the game was in Baton Rouge, and it intrigued me, and I watched the game, and I just saw how the fans in Baton Rouge, it was just unbelievable, and it really gripped me. And since that time, I became an LSU Tiger fan, and I had a friend of mine who was really savvy to football, and he was a great athlete. And on my street, we would play afterwards LSU Tulane. He knew LSU's rival was Tulane, and we'd play football games and everything. And
man,
I said to myself, I'm going to be an LSU Tiger one day, and I told everybody, and they looked at me like I was crazy. All through my days in high school, I was fortunate to grow up, and my dad coached against Joe Montana. I saw him play in high school. I was just a ball boy, young, at the age of 9 or 10 years old, and I knew Montana would be a great quarterback. We were fortunate to beat his team his senior year, but you just knew a guy like Joe Montana would be a star, and it just drove me to get a scholarship to LSU. That was my goal. And through elementary school, grade school, and high school, I always tell people, I'm going to go to LSU. And they say, LSU, you crazy? And at the time, the University of Pittsburgh started to have good teams with Tony Dorsett and that, but I was still strong on LSU, and I just kept at it, you know.
Well, tell everybody how you walked on, because it wasn't easy. You came here as a walk-on, and you and I heard that you you asked you pretty aggressive from what I hear from your former teammates. You were you had that attitude where you weren't scared at all back then as a kid.
No, not at all, Lee. I just relied on my faith. I 1983, I was in a junior college in Pittsburgh area, and unfortunately my senior year in high school I got injured, so I wasn't able to play. I injured my neck, and a team won the state championship, and so that was really depressing to me, not being able to be part of that. And so I didn't play football for the junior college didn't have a football team. So we're looking at 1983 from 1980 to 83, not playing football. So I came and from my junior college, my counselor said, "Nick, you can go to college anywhere you want. Where do you want to go to college?" Because I got my grades up, and I just had a big smile and said, "I want to go to LSU." So we applied, and lo and behold, in late December of 83, I get accepted. So I made a commitment. I decided to go. So I did everything, but unfortunately I forgot to find that I needed a place to live, a stay, a dorm.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, I have not visited LSU. Don't know anybody.
Never.
Just what I saw on television, my dream. And, I want to thank a sports information director by the name of Jimmy Himes, who was one of the sports information directors at LSU at the time. I'd written to him about getting an LSU football media guy, and he sent me one, no cost at all. I got it, and I studied the players that were on that team, and because I knew I was going to go to LSU, so I wanted to know these guys before they knew me. So I studied that media guy, and I looked at guys like Tommy Clapp, Steve Rehage, Jeff Wickersham, all the names, Lifford Hobley, and Lance Smith. So I wanted to know them before I got down there. So long story short, come January of 1984, my parents gave me $200. I flew an airplane out for my first time ever. Landed in Baton Rouge, did a taxi to go to the campus. One thing is, I don't know where the dorms had closed. I got there in the evening. I had no place to stay.
Nick, we had cabs back then in Baton Rouge. We had cabs.
There was cabs back then. I had to take a cab, gave them a tip, gone on the campus. I'm looking around. Where am I going to stay at? The registration office is closed. The dorms are really closed. So I asked the guy, and he pointed me to the stadium. So I go to the stadium, and I find the head residency that they were up there. They were open, and a guy felt sorry for me. I had two bags in my hand. He said, "You could stay in the stadium for the night. We'll get you a room." And then the first thing in the morning, I wanted to go to the registration's office to find a dorm to stay in.
Man, that's determination there, man.
Yeah, and so before I went to the dorm the next day, I said, "I got to go to the football office." And Bill Ansbarger was just hired the head coach, and I knew Bill Ansbarger's background. I knew about the 1972 Miami Dolphins, the no-name defense, and he was the genius behind that. And I knew that he had been an NFL coach for the New York Giants head coach, and it was amazing at the time. I just walked into his office, no security or anything. The secretary said, "He's in." So I walked in. I said to him, looked at him, he was startled. I said, "Coach, my name is Nick Buchholz from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm coming here. I'm going to walk on to your football team." And he looked at me, and he said, "Okay." And then he said, "You need to see Coach Jurgensen," who was the strength coach at the time. And, all 5'7 and 160 pounds of me. And right after that, he told me when to go. I went straight to get a dorm. They got me a dorm at the Pentagon dormitories at the time. And the next day I was right there talking to Coach Jorgensen. He told me when they have workouts, and I was ready to go.
Man, I love that story, Nick. I mean, that was determination. I mean, you know, back then, though, you could walk in with the coach. Now you got to get a pass to get through the first four doors. But back then, that was – Man, that's a beautiful story, man.
It's amazing the people that come into your life. I had to talk to a guy, Larry Jones, who was in compliance to get all my records. And here, Larry Jones was the head football coach at Florida State, who Bill Parcells was an assistant under him. And Larry was a tough guy, kept on wanting to know if I had all my records straight and everything. And I got to know Sam Nader, who was in charge of all the walk-ons at the time. Those guys later became very good friends of mine. In fact, Coach Nader's about to retire. One of the nicest gentlemen I've ever met. And I'll tell you what, those guys, Larry Jones and Coach Nader, became big influences and became great friends of mine throughout my time at LSU.
Nick, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have more of Nick Buchholz, former LSU strength coach, former LSU football player from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's calling in from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nick, we'll come back, talk about Bill Ansbarger and some of the coaches at LSU and some of your teammates you still talk to. I know you still talk to a few of them. And get your thoughts later in the show on this imaging and likeness of these college athletes. What's your thoughts? And if the playoffs expand into 12, if you think that's a good idea, get your opinion on that. We'll be right back. Listen, whatever you're driving right now, Tommy Harvey wants it. Bring it in to Harvey Subaru, Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City, or John Harvey Toyota. They're paying big bucks for all trades right now. They'll cut you a check right there. Tell them Lee sent you. Welcome back. You listen to the Sports Scouting Report. I'm your host, Lee Burkina. Our guest is Nick Buchholz, former LSU strength coach from 1984, was assistant strength coach from 84 to 2000 at LSU, was a football player. Came in and walked on from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Those names you were rattling off earlier, Nick, Lance Smith from Kannapolis, North Carolina. You were talking about Lifford Hobley from Byrd High School in Shreveport. You know, some great players. Jamie Bice, I know you still talk to this day, went to LaGrange and Lake Charles. I know J.R. Bergamo, went to Shaw High School. But there's a lot of guys that you still talk to this day. You mentioned Tommy Clapp, whose son William Clapp's with the Saints now. So, I mean, those are some great names, man, that you were throwing out.
You got to realize at the time, LSU was coming off of Jerry Stovall's era. 82, they went to the Orange Bowl, and 83 was a tough year. But going into 84, Coach Ansbarger inherited it. It was a good team. He had freshmen like Joe Abergamo and Eric Andelsack coming in. And these guys were one of the top high school players in the country.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Jamie Bice, great athlete. I mean, I'm going in to a place where these guys are highly recruited and top athletes in their own right. And here I am walking on with confidence in myself to a program that's one of the tops in the country. And, LSU, people don't realize, but LSU was really well known. It started off, with Billy Cannon, and even before that, Y.A. Tittle, just a tradition.
Yeah.
And here I am, just a guy coming in to these great athletes. And, I remember the first two guys I met at LSU were guys, an offensive lineman named Kevin Langford and Ray Brock. And I asked them where Broussard Hall is, and they pointed right where is that, right where it was at. I was right there, and I said to myself, I'm going to be there one day.
Yeah,
I'm going to be right with these guys.
Yeah, you mentioned Y.A. Tittle, the Marshall, Texas native from East Texas, and currently LSU has a Marshall High School kid, Chasen Hines, who's an offensive guard from Marshall, Texas High School in Texas. Been a lot of good Texas players over the years. Nick, what was your favorite part about Baton Rouge over the years? I mean, as a player and a strength coach and was it the food? Was it? I know people here are nice, but I mean, I lived in Philadelphia, by the way, for a year and a half, and I saw Allegheny on here, the community college. I drove by that place a few times when I was living there, and I worked in Cheltenham High School where Reggie Jackson went. You familiar with Cheltenham?
I'm not familiar with that, Lee. That's more of the Philadelphia side. Yeah. I was in the Pittsburgh side with guys, great quarterbacks in themselves, and Johnny Unitas, Joe Namath, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Jim Kelly. They've always had, top quarterbacks. Babe Parilli, it's been known as a quarterbacking town, and I was a quarterback growing up. I was able to throw a football between 60 and 70 yards when I was in eighth grade. So I always was blessed with a great arm. So that was the only position I really know, quarterback, but I knew I was a small guy walking in onto an unbelievable great program.
We've got that in common. I could throw it about 60, 65, and I wasn't a big guy. My dad was a coach, too. And
so, you develop those skills at an early age.
Yeah. Well, my dad had me throwing the ball at six, and I know you were probably throwing it early,
same
too.
Same thing.
You know,
yes,
out
sir.
In the yard and loved it. You know, my dad was my hero.
I got a story. Me and my brother, Christmas Day of 1971, my brother was in Miami Dolphins gear, and I was in Detroit Lions gear, and we did a full scrimmage on Christmas morning out on the yard. It was fun.
Yeah, man. And the big school there now in Pittsburgh, what is Penn Hills? That's one of the big ones.
Penn Hills has always been a great school for football. Bill Frelick, who became a top offensive lineman, was one of the Outland candidates and became a pro football for the Lions and the Falcons. And then my high school, Thomas Jefferson High School, won a state championship just this past year. They won like four out of the last 5 years.
And Harrisburg has produced some great ones, like LeVar Arrington, the kid that just went in the first round this year from Penn State, linebacker.
Sure. But the thing, there's always been great players, but the thing that's great about LSU and kids there, there's so much talent that kids want to go play in the Southeastern Conference because the Southeastern Conference, you know, has the best of the best.
Right.
And so these kids know about the LSU and all the schools of the SEC. I don't want to name the other schools and give them any credit. Kids will want to play football. That's a lot of the love of the game is big there in states like Pennsylvania.
Nick, let me ask you this. You were a strength coach for a long time, you know, at LSU and ULL. I still want to say USL, but ULL.
Yeah.
What's changed, in your opinion, about the strength training approach as a coach to now compared to back in the 80s? You know, a lot this looks like it's just – I know it's year-round training, but, it's just so much now on the plate of strength coach, it seems.
Well, when I started, Tim Jorgensen was my strength coach. And even though I was a walk-on, he treated me – like I was really one of the a big part of the team. He said, you know, never give up. He instilled in me, don't quit. He was rough on me like anything. And we had these tough workouts and it was, you know, back then the walk-ons and the players, you would go, you'd be in the same groups. And today, now it's more specialized. You have to have a special permission to just even walk on to even be with these guys.
Yeah.
But it carried over with Tim Jorgensen and to Barry Rubin, who really gave me my first break. Coach Rubin is still in the NFL as a Philadelphia Eagles strength coach, I believe.
Yeah.
And Coach Rubin gave me a chance, and then I became Coach Rubin's graduate assistant, student assistant. And then the guy who I think was the father of it all was Milton Williams, who was the best strength coach LSU ever had.
Wow.
And Milt just was unbelievable in his knowledge. He's a former track standout, went to the Olympic trials as a thrower. He just had so many ideas that he got from his track days, and he installed it in LSU. And he was the big force behind all the great athletic teams at LSU, not just football, but basketball at the time.
Yeah,
and later baseball. I give Milton Williams. He taught me everything about the knowledge of strength training, and today it's more specialized. Now they're getting away from the dumbbells and the barbells, and they're doing the band training and analytics, and they look at the speed and they break down. You know, everything's computerized. Back then there was hardly any computers. I know Milton that they used. A guy from the computer department named John Two that would do all our stats and everything. And I was a stat guy, and I loved to see all the strength stats that we had on the guys and everything. And the combine at the time, the NFL combine was just starting up at the time. But it's gotten so individualized now and computerized. Back then, it was more group.
Yeah.
You were with your group. Now, I was assigned to groups with guys who were star players, and we had groups of four that we'd work out with, and you were really monitored. Today's strength coaches, you might find 30 strength coaches on the staff.
Yeah.
Back in the day when Milton Williams and Coach Rubin and Coach Jurgensen were the strength coaches, you had one assistant. And then when I became a strength coach, I had no assistants at UL. I had to do every sport, and that's what how it was at LSU. Not only was I the head strength coach or the assistant in charge of football, but you had to do women's basketball, women's volleyball. You had to do baseball, basketball. And I became the first women's head strength coach in LSU history in 1994.
Wow.
So that's always been a great honor. They're the first head strength coach that they hired for women's sports. I was the guy.
Nick, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to think of something, because a lot of fans would love to know this, especially the older guys that listen to the show. Think about the guys when you were there with the strongest players, if you remember their max totals in the bench and squad and clean. I hear some stories that Andelsek, the late Andelsek, could bench a lot. And don't know if you remember that stuff, but when we come back, let me know who sticks out to you as the strongest players that you were around in 11 years at LSU in football. We'll be right back with more Nick Buchholz, former LSU strength coach. We'll be right back. Looking for a used car? Harvey Autos has three dealerships, which means three times the used vehicles. They've got everything from fuel-efficient compacts to luxury models, even hybrids, and certified pre-owned with a warranty. Check out John Harvey Toyota, Harvey Subaru, or Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City. Welcome back. You're listening to Sports Scouting Report. I'm your host, Lee Burkeen. Our guest today is Nick Buchholz, former LSU strength coach from 84 to 2000, assistant to Tim Jorgensen, who's actually in Baton Rouge. I met him at Dunham High School. He's still around Baton Rouge, and you were throwing those great names out. Barry Rubin, as you said, is still in the NFL now as a strength coach, and goes on and on and on. But, Nick, who are some of the players during that era when you were there that you would say were the strongest players in the bench, squat, clean? Do you remember some of those totals?
Oh, sure. In fact, we just had a reunion a couple weeks ago in Baton Rouge that I went to, and I talked to the biggest influence on my life as a strength coach, Milton Williams, and his assistant, Greg Tiner, who later became the head strength coach at Mississippi State. And three guys stand out in my time in the early 80s. Eric Andelsek, Nacho Albergamo, and a guy named Greg Dublock.
Yeah, Orleans linebacker, John Curtis.
Yes. And these guys were just weight room guys who were as strong as anybody. Now, Eric and Nacho, Joseph Albergamo, two of the best bench presses you've ever want to see. Nacho and Eric were in the mid-400s in their bench presses. They're pretty close to 450 pounds.
Man.
And these guys squatted well over 500 pounds, near six. And Greg Dubach, pound for pound, was one of the strongest guys I've ever come across with in 20 years of coaching.
Man, says a lot.
Greg was an intense linebacker. In fact, he helped me, Milton, Greg Tyner in the weight room when Greg finished his playing days. He was a big part of the success of the 85 and 86 team.
Yeah, has anybody ever benched 600 pounds at LSU?
When I was there, I didn't see anybody bench over 600 pounds in my time at all. That's really impressive. But when you're bench pressing over 400 pounds there at the collegiate level, that's an amazing feat and by your weight. And when you have a guy like Dubrock, who was hardly 200 pounds benching over 400 pounds, that's one of the pound-for-pound strongest people you ever meet. But the two guys that were the strongest I've seen were Joe Albergamo and Eric Andelsek.
Yeah. There's some talk that Kevin Steltz, who walked on from Rummel, benched 600 pounds. He was at short arms, about 5'7", 240.
He wasn't there when I was there.
Yeah, he came on later on. But he was a guy that benched almost six. So supposedly he did 600, which is crazy. The short arms help, huh, Nick?
Yeah, that always helped me in my bench press days. But it's amazing that I would find it hard to match two guys or three guys and Dubrock, Albergamo, and Anilsek and their intensity and strength. To this day, it just, I never forget those guys, what they did for LSU. You got to realize Joe was an All-American, Kodak All-American,
yeah.
And one of the top centers in the country, and one of the top players that ever played at LSU. And
Academic Hall of Fame, too.
Academic Hall of Fame, and then Eric was probably the most intense, strongest guy I've ever come in contact with. A guy that you definitely wouldn't want to mess with. A guy who was really right. Tough in the locker room and had everybody's respect. In fact, that when I was walking on, I made a little name for myself. I would wrestle Eric all the time. I'd get pounded all the time, but everybody, all the guys liked how I kept hanging in there with him.
Yeah, the late Eric Anilsek from Thibodaux, Anilsek. Louisiana, left us way too young.
Yes.
And also hear that Eric Hill was one of the bad dudes on the team outside of Eric.
Eric
and those
Hill
guys.
Was, that man is legendary, has my respect. He was just a tough guy, very strong, just natural strength. He was definitely a guy you wouldn't want to mess with. And he laid it all on the field, man. He had a great career in the NFL, and it was a great honor to know and coach him.
Nick, we're going to take a break when we come back. I want to get your thoughts on this playoff system going to maybe 12 teams. I want to get your thoughts. And then athletes in college getting paid. What do you think of that when we come back? We'll be back with more Nick Buchholz in just a minute.
So, hey, guys, just wanted to take a minute to tell you about Harvey Autos. If you need a new or used car, there's three great dealerships right here worth checking out. John Harvey Toyota, Harvey Subaru, and Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City. Low prices, honest people, tell them Lee sent you.
Welcome back. You listen to the Sports Scouting Report. We have Nick Buchholz, former LSU assistant strength coach for 11 years, former player from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, calling us today from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nick, you know, what do you think of the playoff system probably going to 12 teams from four?
I'm glad you brought that up, Lee, because I'll set a scenario for you. In 1994, in the weight room, we'd have debates. And I drew a plan up, a 16-team playoff, because there were some teams at the time with the way the bowl system was going.
Come on, you drew that up in 84? You drew that up
in 94.
94, okay. Wow, okay.
And I talked about the playoff system, drew a playoff system just like they had in NCAA basketball. And we had a woman's athletic director, Debbie Corum, who knew Roy Kramer at the time. And I gave her my plan, and Roy Kramer shot it down. And there was always the excuse of the college presidents would say, oh, it interferes with academics. And I said to myself, really? Well, at the time, it was called Division II. They would have the playoffs. Division 1A, 1AA would have the playoffs. And those academic, they had tougher academic institutions than the big schools did.
Yeah.
But they managed the playoffs. But then I realized that there was a lot of money that was given to the presidents of these universities by the bowl committees, you know?
Yeah.
And the bowls made a lot of money from television. But once they found out that the playoff system could make you a lot of money, then we saw a playoff system implemented. Now 12 teams, you know, if you talk about the money, how much money it would make, it will be there. But I really think it should, because there's always a team left out. And they say, well, it takes away from the games and the regular season. But really, that's what sports is all about. You get that underdog story, you know, the March Madness, everybody fell in love with that. And I was a big college NCAA tournament fan in the early 1970s when UCLA made a run. I watched it religiously. But I think you need to now, because the way that there's a lot of money involved, and I just think it would be great for college football if they did.
I think it's the best thing for the SEC West, because Saban,
yeah, I mean,
Saban, you know, you got to beat Alabama to go to the playoffs in the past. Now you don't have to beat Alabama to go to the playoffs.
Look at the schedule at any SEC team plays. You're going to play a tough team like Alabama and these other teams. You're going to lose three games. And does that knock you out of a playoff when these other, you know, the other conferences aren't as tough? I say I still stick with my plan. If you got 16 conferences and you have the Sun Belt and all these other, they want to get in with the big boys, have them just like seeded like number 16 and play against the number one seed in the first round, and you could play them at home or neutral sites as the bowl games. I say you do it because, I mean, what is college football about? It's about the dream of the underdog trying to make it to the big time. So I say that's my plan in 1994 would stick with today.
I like that 16-game plan, 16 teams, because you got 16 really good bowl games. You can get rid of the rest of them, right?
Yeah,
And you can keep the real good 16 bowl games, because we don't need 50 bowl games anymore.
Everybody, like, you know, there's people, I've talked to people, say, well, I love the bowl games. But really, if you go look on television, you look in the, there's nobody in the stands for those games. And it's just, I don't think a 6-6 team should go to a bowl game.
I'm with you on that.
I know they say, well, it's for practice. Well, then how about this idea? If you win 6 games, you get to practice.
Right.
You get to practice in December. You know, instead of going to a bowl game, they want to practice. If you win 6, you practice.
What do you think of the college athletes being getting paid now with their image and likeness and all that stuff? What do you think of that?
Well, this is my opinion, my personal opinion, you know, not fact, but being a kid that came from nothing, I really think they should. I mean, it's kind of weird seeing your name and image being shown on all these games and everything, on these games that they play,
and commercials and all that.
And you're not getting anything compensated, and they're making big money on it. You know, people would say, well, they get paid room and board, but really, how much money they put in the university? Well, college football has become a big business. It's actually probably bigger than the NFL with the money they make. It's only right that these kids get compensated for that.
I just think they need about 12 booklets of rules, though, Nick, because it's going to be one of those trial and error first year goes. It's going to be some stuff they're going to have to, you know, figure out.
How do you monitor it, you know? I mean, how do you – how does one school get so much money? How do these guys get, you know, get paid and compared to a Sun Belt school, to an SEC school? And
how do you keep the whole team happy if 40 kids get no money?
Yeah, you know? That's the thing. And you got to be baby steps, but you know, the NCAA can figure it out, where as they always punish one smaller school, and the bigger schools that get away, it seems like, with some of these crimes.
I think the NCAA should make the colleges, where it's legal for the colleges to sponsor this likeness image and for the players that get left out. What do you think?
Yeah, I really, Lee, I talk about this. I just wish the NCAA would get back to, you know, I know this is a Nirvana type thing, a utopia, but what college football is college athletics, student athlete.
Yeah.
If they get back to the day, but then, you know, it's just, you know, just the college basketball. To me, it's the game I first loved, and it's turned into just the one and done. Just as I don't hardly watch it anymore. It's a tough game to watch. It's just became a minor league of the NBA. The NFL is college football going to be a minor league to the NFL? You know,
I hope not.
I hope not either.
Yeah. Nick, let me ask you this. Some quick questions for you before we go. Your favorite MLB team since you've been a child?
Well, I'm a big Philadelphia Phillies fan, and they say, why Philadelphia growing up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Well, there was a guy named Dick Allen. He was a Philadelphia Philly, and I went to a Pittsburgh Pirate game at the old Forbes Field as a six-year-old kid. I went to get an autograph on the Forbes Field, Pittsburgh. My dad took me on the field. I wanted to get a famous Pittsburgh Pirate, I will not mention his name, to get his autograph, and he didn't give me his autograph, and I cried like a baby. And Dick Allen gave me a bat and said, here, kid. I became a Philadelphia Phillies fan ever since.
Hey, I'm a big Mike Schmidt fan and Steve Carlton.
Mike Schmidt was, to me, the greatest third baseman of
time. Wasn't he a great man? His home run power, everything.
I love Mike Schmidt. I love the Philadelphia Phillies. Still follow him to this day.
Aaron Nola.
But it's great. But if I could mention one thing, Lee, a big thing that's happening in my life coming up in August, I've been invited to go to Alan Faneca's Hall of Fame induction, and that's one of the biggest honors I could ever have as a coach.
That's
being invited
time.
By Alan to represent him at LSU. And Alan, and going back in time, and when we lost Alan, when Alan came out early in the NFL draft in '98, everybody thought it would be Kevin Faulk that we would miss if he would leave, but it was Alan Faneca who we missed the most, because if you look at it, after he left early, 1998-99, we had bad seasons.
And Alan was from Houston, Texas, but originally from New Orleans, went to John Curtis early on, as you
know.
That's
right.
And I got to know Alan, his dad and mom. But, you know, well, here's the deal. Let me ask you this.
The smartest player I've ever been around.
People always want to know. Alan, you know, watching him in practice. I used to go to practices there at the time and, you know, still do. But he came – day one he was on campus – he was just so strong. I mean, was that natural strength? I mean, he was just such a natural, strong kid.
He bench pressed way over 400 pounds. Strong, smart. I mean, he just was ahead of his time as a freshman. I mean, he just knew this guy was going to be great. I mean, he was already well mature at his age.
Yeah, I mean, he was just a thumper.
And the players just were in awe of him. He had everybody's respect in the locker room and his teammates' respect. He was that guy. He was that type of guy, leader. And we really lost a lot when he went out early in the NFL draft. That really hurt our team.
Nick, what's crazy is LSU wasn't, as you know, winning at that time a lot when they signed him. And he chose LSU over a lot of good schools. I mean, it was a destiny deal, him being from Louisiana, originally New Orleans.
Yes, I did. And that was, you know, he was a Curly Hallman recruit, and he played for DiNardo, but he was brought in by Curly's staff, and he's legendary. And he, in fact, the first Hall of Famer that I've ever coached and been around at LSU football, the first guy. Kevin Mawai.
Yeah.
I take that back. Kevin and I had the pleasure of coaching Kevin. And I was a personal trainer for his wife, but
Leesville.
Kevin and Alan, two guys that I was there at LSU during their freshman time when they first got there till they finished, and two Hall of Famers.
Yeah, started at John Curtis and transferred to Lamar Consulate, in Houston, Texas?
Yes.
Rosenberg. Yeah. But Nick, I appreciate – tell everybody the date, because I got to even be reminded for the Hall of Fame. When do they actually do that?
Alan will be inducted on Sunday – August the 8th.
Wow. I bet you're going to enjoy that, man. That's going to be
I'll enjoy that. And this year it's different because the 2020 class is going to be inducted on that Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't have a Hall of Fame induction last year due to the pandemic.
So it's like a double for you. You get to see
yes,
two.
Yes, it's a double. So Saturday and Sunday. And Alan will be inducted the same time as Peyton Manning, a New Orleans guy.
Yeah, and you're going to get to see
LSU roots go. My LSU roots go back to watching his dad play for Ole Miss.
Yeah,
talked about.
You're going to get to see 12 inductees for 2 years.
I'm very, very honored, and it's LSU will be represented pretty well there, and people, LSU fans realize how great of a university and a school it is. When we won the national championship 2 years ago. That's all everybody talked to. I went with Jack Marucci, the LSU head of sports medicine, and Jack's a big baseball fan, and we went to the spring training 2 years ago before the pandemic hit, and every team in Florida, all those players asked about LSU football. That's the first thing they asked about.
Wow.
LSU football. So LSU football is probably one of the most recognizable names in college athletics.
Nick, before we go, tell everybody what you're doing now. I know that Kevin Franklin, former LSU Tiger, works for the YMCA here in Baton Rouge, and you are also with the YMCA in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I noticed you're in Pittsburgh with the YMCA first.
Yes, I started when I was going to grad school, and in the summers I didn't stay in Baton Rouge. I would work at the Pittsburgh YMCA and come back to Baton Rouge. But YMCA has been a big part of my life. I'm at the Myrtle Beach YMCA under the direction of Ryan Finney, the CEO, and Mark McCauley, our fitness director. Wellness director, those are great guys to be working with, and it's just a great thing to be a part of the YMCA and see young kids and people just working out, and it's good to stay back with the weight training and everything to still stay in it. But my dream is still to one day get back to the place I love, and that's LSU, my alma mater, and I really miss being involved in college athletics and hopefully, you know, you never say never. You know, I'm still a young man, and one day I would love to be back at my alma mater.
You're still young, and look, we put it out there. I'm glad you did put it out there because a lot of LSU fans hear this, and I'm sure they'd love to have you back. We'd love to have you back in Baton Rouge somehow. But, Nick, man, any final thoughts about anything else you want to mention or promote or anything?
Well, Lee, I just mentioned this to you. I came down to LSU as a 20-year-old young kid who didn't know much, came from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and was older than most of the guys when I got there. In fact, Lance Smith thought I was a coach when I first got to Boston. But I left LSU when I was 38 years old.
Wow.
And finally became a head strength coach at University of Lafayette. Got out of the business at age 44. So LSU was a big part of my life, and there were a lot of great people that took care of me, that raised me like I was one of their own, the Morrow family, and then guys like Jamie Bice and Nacho, Joseph Albagamo, and the Claps and Johnny Hazard, Steve Rehodges, those guys all took care of me. And
Gordy Rush.
If it wasn't for Kyle Pierce, Milt Williams, and Greg Tyner, and Coach Jorgensen and Ruben, I would have never had my chance. And so many people played a part of it, but I'm very thankful to my faith in God that what got me there. And a man who was a big influence to a lot of kids that nobody knows about, he did our FCA there for a long time, Tyler LaFosse.
Yes, I love Tyler.
Great LSU legend, and he took a liking to me, and we played a big part in molding kids, and I was a big part of the FCA at LSU for all my time there, and played a big part of my life and my faith.
Well, Nick, appreciate you taking the time to come on all the way from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, man. Enjoyed having you. And look, you inspired kids by telling your story. You give hope to guys that want to walk on. I tell this story to a lot of kids all the time. Don't be scared to walk into a football office, and especially if you're going to enroll in school and say, look, give me a shot. There's nothing wrong with that. Give me a shot.
That's right. Never give up. It worked for me. And at the time, I remember Jamie did a big article. It was LSU's own Rudy. And you never know till you try, because I didn't want to regret it being a 59-year-old man now and just sitting back and say, if I only would have followed my dream and went to walk on at LSU, if I only would have did it. But I did it, and I'm grateful for it. And it was a big part of my life.
Well, Nick, don't hang up. I'm going to end the show, and I want to promote our magazine. We put out a preview magazine every year you would love, because I know you love information. We have a magazine called Louisiana Football. This is our 25th year. We put out a preview book of all the high schools recruiting and all the colleges in Louisiana, especially LSU and all the schools. It's over 120-page book. It's got a ton of recruiting in it from me scouting from last year, the year before. It'll be out in late August. You can go to LAFootballMagazine.com to pre-order a South copy, and we have a North copy, and we can get a digital copy. And, Nick, I'll mail you one, but before you hang up, definitely text me your mailing address, because I want to mail you a magazine this year. Awesome.
Oh, thank you very much, Lee. I would love that.
Yeah, and but everybody, I hope everybody enjoyed the show today. We will see you really soon.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Scouting Report podcast with Lee Brekeen.